open work session on executive appointments, and I apologize to those of you who traveled from afar to come here to testify. I have a very busy committee members. They're occupied in other committees and trying to wind up work because their committees are going to be shut down next week and so on. So we will have more members here, and we will act on these issues today, I'm sure. I'd like for you to, as an announcement, come forward and put your testimony on the record, and we will proceed in that way. I'll ask Michael Cook, first on the agenda, to come forward. Michael is appearing, having been appointed to the State Board of Tax Service Examiners. Why do you want to be on that board?
Thank you, Senators, and good afternoon. I'd like to serve the residents of the state of Oregon by being on the Board of Tax Service Examiners, by putting my knowledge of administrative rules and policies to good use by serving the two different groups of individuals that the Board of Tax Service Examiners serves. That would be the individuals who come to licensed tax preparers to get their individual income taxes prepared, and also the professionals who are regulated by this industry. I'd like to use my knowledge of administrative rules and procedures to help ensure that the testing for tax service income tax preparers is fair and consistent. And I'd also like to enforce, to use my knowledge and experience to fairly enforce the code of ethics that the Board of Tax Service Examiners has. I'd also like to serve as a board member on a professional basis to increase my knowledge of administrative rules and policies, administrative hearings and policies, and budgetary concerns. Presently, I'm employed as a technical and executive assistant with Senior Disabled Services Division, where I represent the agency in contested case hearings. I feel that the knowledge and experiences that I have gotten me up to this point with only be helped out by being able to serve the residents of Oregon as a member of the Board of Tax Service Examiners. I appreciate the opportunity to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Your past experience, how has that prepared you for this service?
I think it served me very well. I've been an Oregonian for most of my life, having moved into the state when I was about 2 years old. Graduated from Jesuit High School in Portland, Oregon, and now I reside in Tualatin, Oregon. I used to also have a JD degree from Lewis and Clark Northwestern School of Law, and so I have a good knowledge and understanding of rules and regulations and interpreting those and making and understanding how rules and policies interact with each other. And I believe I can use my knowledge of statutory interpretation and understanding rules and policies to effectively put those in order, making sure the agency does its business in accordance with the rules and the statutes and the rules that have been promulgated.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to know if Mr. Cook, when he was working as a gymnastics judge, ever awarded anyone a perfect 10.
Yes, I did. I did that last summer at the National Gymnastics Championships. I've been doing gymnastics judging for a long time, and I've been fortunately been able to move up the ranks. And last summer, I got to judge the National Gymnastics Championships. I was on the vaulting panel, and I awarded a gymnast a perfect 10 on the vault because he did a hamstring double front, and he was a very difficult vault, and he stuck it, and we gave him a 10-0.
There you go.
It was an exciting moment for me.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time, and we will be taking this up further when we have a forum here.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
With that, we're going to close the hearing on Michael Cook and invite David Schreckler to come forward, also appointed to the State Board of Tax Service Examiners. Thank you. Would you also tell us why you want to serve?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David Schreckler, and I'm a nominee for the position on the State Board of Tax Service Examiners. I'm interested in serving tax school examiners for the following reasons. One, I believe in the mission of the Board of Tax Service Examiners. I began preparing returns in another state, and I've seen the poor quality of work that can result when preparers are not required to pass a licensing test or maintain continuing education. Therefore, it is important that the Board continue to enforce licensing requirements. One of my goals will be to promote the use of licensees by consumers. I believe my experience with the state budgeting and accounting systems can be of assistance to the office staff. I have 14 years' experience with the state as a budget analyst, or fiscal coordinator, I should say, and an accountant. And I prepared the budget and done the accounting for a smaller agency. I know the people involved in the state process at the state level. Therefore, I can be a resource. I'm also interested in improving the quality of work done by Oregon licensees. Even with our licensing law, some work is not of the quality that I believe is possible. Education is essential to improving quality. I'm also interested in exploring other options, such as peer review, to encourage quality work. I'm further interested in promoting the Oregon system to other states and to the Internal Revenue Service. I see this as an opportunity to give something back to the profession I enjoy. I've been serving clients from my Kaiser office since 1986, and I think this profession provides a lot of peace of mind for the average citizen. My practice primarily serves individuals and what I call micro-businesses. We also do some corporate and estate work. We serve clients in several other states as well as Oregon. I've served on boards committees for various nonprofit organizations, and I do well at problem-solving, analysis, and bringing out the best of diverse viewpoints in a group setting. I'm a member of several professional organizations, and in addition to being a licensed tax consultant, I'm enrolled to practice before the Internal Revenue Service. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have for me.
Any questions? Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I probably should have engaged Mr. Cook in this question as well, but we had in front of this committee, I think at our last hearing, and I know we had legislation to this effect the last session, that would require statements in the voter's pamphlet when you presented a measure to actually be understandable. And we had a bill in there tonight that would allow the people who put the phrasing together to ask the question to actually use articles like and or the, so people could maybe have a clue as to what it is we're asking them to vote on. And I go through all this, Mr. Chairman, just to simply ask you, if we passed a bill that said that the tax code ought to be understandable, do you think we could actually accomplish that? And would you support it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Miller, I would definitely support it. And one of my...
Is there a conflict of interest if people could actually do their own forms?
Senator, I'm kind of treading dangerous ground here. One of my proposals for tax simplification is to not allow any member of Congress or the state legislature to hire professional assistants. I think that would go a long way.
Can you wait until we're gone?
Part of the wrong thing to say here.
I think you're on target.
Yes, it could damage the number of people. However, there are a number of people who would come to a professional just because they're afraid of it. But I think it would be something that should be worked toward. One of the things I've done at Department of Administrative Services is help rewrite some accounting documents, which are full of rather arcane language, down to at least below 12th grade level. So I'm going to look out to 10th. I've had some experience doing that, and I think it's something that I think could, for the most part, be done, especially in Oregon. I think it will be tougher with the Internal Revenue Code.
Well, I know, speaking as the chair of the Revenue Committee, I don't do mine. And I noticed, I think, in the federal Congress that very few members, including, I think, the chairs of the revenue committees and the respective bodies, do not attempt to do their own taxes. That's very telling. It's not just unique to taxation. I noticed last week or a couple weeks ago there was an invitation to several educators to take the test and the sim and the cam, and they all refused with the exception of Mr. Saxton from other schools. And I appreciate that observation, and I just, whatever you can do during your term here to advance simplification, I think would be very beneficial. It's just, in my view, shameful that people cannot plainly understand their obligations and argue over whether or not the policy is correct, but at least it should be understood. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Miller, if I may add, one of the things my business has done, not currently doing, as we published a book on Oregon tax law, which took the ORFs, the OARs, and the explanatory from material from revenue and arranged it by subject matter, which was helpful, at least to professionals. It was geared toward that market, but it's something that I've worked on in the past.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. And again, we'll be taking up the appointment recommendation here shortly. That we open the hearing for Catherine Sinison, appointed to the Government Standards and Practices Commission.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman and Senator Miller, I thank the committee for an opportunity to be here today for two reasons. One is that I've been involved over at the Human Resources Building today all day interviewing people to be the new SDF director, and so that was this is a welcome change from that atmosphere. And secondly, I'm just glad to have an opportunity to be in front of the committee to hopefully get confirmed on to be able to serve on this commission. The reason why I feel that it's important to serve on this commission is twofold. First of all, my folks taught me that part of being a good citizen in the world is to do community service. And I look at this commission as a way to fulfill that commitment to my folks. And also, I think that those who make the rules and those who enforce the rules also need to live by the rules. And so someone needs to make sure that that's happening and that there's an accountability to the people of this state so that they can feel like their government is working impartially and fairly in their favor. And those are the two primary reasons I would like to be involved with this committee, and I'm asked for your confirmation today.
Thank you very much. Question? You just missed the testimony, Senator Brown, of Catherine Tennyson.
That is unfortunate.
Senator Miller,
ask you a question. It's appointed some people recently to this commission who had some experience actually running for and serving in office. And in your statement, you noted that your mother served on a school board and elections were discussed. Can you tell me, how did you view the relationship between contributors and elected officials generally?
Let me also just an aside, let you know that my brother is currently serving as the mayor of Durham, North Carolina. So I have my family is active on many different levels. I think that is a complicated question because I think that there is the world that I would like to believe exists, which is to say that people who are elected to office serve using their own judgment and using the judgment of what they believe their constituents as a whole would like to have happen. As legislation, and I think that there's what actually happens sometimes, which is that people get undue influence by the contributions that they give to folks who are running. So I think that's a difficult question to answer because I think that there's a Pollyanna in me that believes that things ought to be fair all the time, that people ought to do the right thing regardless of who's getting them into office. And there's also the realistic person that knows that that's not always what happens, and I think that's unfortunate.
Could you help me with that?
Further question.
What is undue influence?
I think that there are, well, undue influence is when people sacrifice what is best for their constituents to serve a special interest. That may not be a legal definition, but it's my personal definition.
And, of course, that would always be in the eyes of objective observers.
Absolutely.
It is my hope that that when you serve in this capacity, that at least you'll have somewhere in the recesses of your thought process the more optimistic view about people.
Mm-hmm.
It's my experience in this process that that is the usual case. That, whereas I think a lot of people have friends and supporters, they do exercise good independent judgment here. And then I just finished reading some part of an article in the Wall Street Journal from yesterday in the Northwest section, and some Oregon legislators are saying something about a state agency, and of course there's a line in the article saying that the critics of this agency received X amount of dollars last campaign from the group that was being criticized by this particular commission. And I just think it continues to breed an opinion that is, I don't think, particularly well-founded, and it's the cynicism that is, in my view, not justified based on the least experiences I've had, but then I've only been here 15 years.
If I may, I really truly believe that one of the problems that we have in our country is that people are too quick to criticize depending simply because someone is a Democrat or a Republican if they come up with an idea. I think that in order to turn that tide in this country, we've got to start working together and start rowing the boat in the right direction, in the same direction. And I really have retained a lot of that optimism because I don't think there's any other way to live. I do think, though, that my years of being an attorney have been instructive in this to me, because when I first started practicing 15 years ago, I thought that my clients would tell me the truth. And as time went on, I became very disheartened with that idea and figured out that people were coming in and not really telling me the truth, but I've come to a different understanding of that, which is that people have different perceptions about what happens. And the idea is to try to get to the bottom line and reach a common ground about what's going on in a situation so that you can figure out what the best solution is. And I think that's the kind of thing that needs to be applied to all of these things. We can't lose our common sense.
If I might, Ms. Sherman, yes, buoyed by the fact that you mentioned your brother as the mayor in Durham. And my guess is that if he's ever been invited to go see the great basketball team at Duke, by people who have season tickets, or I'm sure they're probably pretty hard to get for that team, there will be those who will just know by virtue of his attending, if he does, maybe he has some policy he doesn't hold, but if he does, that he's in their pocket.
Well,
and I think he would probably know better.
He's a Duke graduate, so he was a Duke
where to get fit at the ball game. Sometimes you go with people who have even better than other graduates.
And it's ironic that you would bring that up, because, you know, Duke was just in the Final Four, and my brother was going to take his two sons down on the booster bus, and he was going to get that privilege because he was the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a lot of heat for that in the press, and so he ended up having to pay his way down there. I mean, he was still always going to go, but just didn't get to go the way. I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying. It's something that we all know, as because we know him, that certainly wasn't anything he was trying to do to favor with anybody.
Or if they lost.
I know. I can't even speak about that. I can't believe that's on the record. I'm just not one team, but two. You know, the women's team was also lost.
Oh, any further questions?
No.
Never know. You're going to get here. Yeah, the gymnastics test, you can put a perfect 10.
Whoa.
Whoa. I was down finding out what the revenue forecast was.
Oh. That's important, too. We're going to close this hearing and open the work session for the appointment. I would recommend the approval of Catherine Emerson to the Government Standards and Practices Commission.
Second.
Would you like me to move on to the others as well?
Let's do them one at a time. We've got a few, and they did take the time to appear here. So, clerk, call or roll, unless there's further discussion.
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Senator Miller.
Aye.
Senator Scott.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, passing the Rules and Elections Committee has moved the reappointment. No, the appointment. This is not a reappointment. This is the appointment of Cassie Simpson to the Board of Government Standards and Practices Commission. The floor, that it might be confirmed. We will go back to
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I would move that we recommend the approval of Michael Cook and David Schreffler to the State Board of Tax Service Examiners.
Thank you, Senator Miller. It's moved. If we move the appointment of Michael Cook and David Schreffler to the State Board of Tax Examiners, do you move with the recommendation that this be confirmed? Any discussion? First call a roll.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't here, but I assume that you questioned both of these too thoroughly, and I see, though, that Michael Cook has a questionable law degree on his resume. I noticed this from Northwestern School Law at Lewis and Clark College, so I'm just a little bit concerned about that. Especially, I got my law degree, but other than that, I will be happy to approve his appointment.
And if you'd notice, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
He also lives in your district.
Ms. Henson also received a degree from Northwestern School of Law, as did I.
See what we got here.
That, of course,
Rick. Anyway. I want to reconsider the motion.
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Senator Miller.
Aye.
Senator Scott.
Motion carries. And move that Michael Cook and David Schreffler be moved to the floor for confirmation vote. With that, we will move on to our fourth executive appointment. Cheryl Kern is a reappointment and is not appearing. And I would accept the motion to move her reappointment.
Mr. Chairman? I just wanted to advise you, I'm not prepared to move on that.
You're not prepared to move on
that? Okay. Not until a situation that is in the circuit court right now is resolved.
All right. We will put that over. Wait a minute.
Do you need a vote?
No, we don't have a majority ready to move on Cheryl Perrin, and so we will, at the moment, move on to work session. Now, wait a minute. We will not do that. We're going to have a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 1117. And if I had a witness list, I would All right, we got Joe Brewer and Scott Berry, and then Bill Brewer is stepped out.
He has stepped out.
Scott, would you come and tell us about this Senate bill that we have before us?
That is good right now.
I have some idea. Let's go. You want to come up and tell us about Senate Bill 1117 or your
certainly, Senator.
Regards to that?
Chair Starr, Scott Berry, let me go wait just a few minutes or go ahead and start in.
I think you can go ahead and start in, and then we'll have Joe follow you.
Okay. Scott Berry with the Oregon Building Industry Association. What I passed out to you is a copy of an agent's opinion that was asked for, requested by the Board of Engineers, Examiners, with regard to single-family dwellings and exempt buildings, those under 4,000 square feet. Currently in the architect's statute, which I've also handed out, which is 671030, there is an exemption for buildings under 4,000 square feet and single-family homes. This simply takes that statute, which is under the architect's statute currently, and moves it over to the engineer's statute. And from the AG's opinion, basically, which I have put in bold, that's current practice right now, and we're just looking to codify that current practice.
Question.
Sure.
You said you moved it over. Does it remain in that statute?
I'm sorry, Chair Starr, yes, it does. It remains under the architect's statute and also
played into
the engineer's statute as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, my name is Joe Brewer. I'm with Building Codes Division. The division, the agency, is neutral on this bill. Our understanding is that it simply does codify what is current practice. I'm here primarily to state for the record that I don't see anything in this bill that would restrict a building official or a local inspector from requiring calculations should they be needed to demonstrate the integrity of a structure. It simply doesn't require an engineer's stamp for those calculations.
Thank you.
Do you have any, take any questions?
Thank you. I think that you've explained it very well, and I appreciate your help.
Thanks for your opportunity.
With that, we're going to take a brief recess until we find another member or two. And open the work session on Senate Bill 1117.
Mr. Chairman. Move Senate Bill 1117 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Miller has moved Senate Bill 1117 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Miller.
Aye.
Senator
Fryer. Aye. Aye. I received the necessary majority. Senate Bill 1117 moved for a due pass, and I will carry. We,
They held on there.
Even though it was Cheryl?
Even though.
We are on
the list.
Are we in recess?
Senator Bryant, we will recess until Senator Bryant joins us, and then we will.
Senator Bryant, would you agree to this?
Probably not.
Really?
I don't know.
Committee on Rules and Elections, and open our work session on SJR 7. We have let the committee administrator tell us what we've done and where we are at the moment.
We've taken testimony several times, and today we have the fourth staff three amendments, which would provide for a five-member nominating commission with two members appointed by the Senate President, two appointed by the Speaker of the House, and one member appointed by the Supreme Court Chief Justice. The members of the commission would serve 4 years. The members of the commission would submit 3 to 5 names for the governor to pick from to fill a judicial vacancy. If the governor did not choose to fill the vacancy from that first list, a second list would be submitted of an additional or different 3 to 5 names, and the governor would be required to pick from that list.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
This is a bill that was proposed by Senator Gerstler and myself, and the initial bill talked about Senate confirmation, of course, which is similar to what we do on many other confirmations right now. And we heard testimony about the effect of our current process, which normally means people who are appointed are not opposed for election, or if they are opposed, which is rare, there were, I think, only 2 or 3 that were actually not successful in retaining it. We talked about the Missouri plan, modified Missouri plan, and then there are a few states that have a commission component. I have informally polled members of the House and the Senate and talked to Senator Durfer, and at this time our recommendation would be to go to the Dash 3 amendments. Not only do I think it will provide more votes in the House and the Senate, I think it has a better chance of passing with the public, because there's a tendency when we refer them to something that gives us more direct power, they have a tendency to say no, and they might see that this would be self-serving, where the commission approach and the recommendation of names doesn't have that particular stigma to it. Judges and members of the Oregon State Bar have suggested that they might have recommendations on the Dash 3. I'll be happy to listen to those, but my preference would be to pass the Dash 3 tonight and work on this on the House side if those things come up.
Further discussion? Representative Bowers. Mm-hmm. Could Mr. Chair ask Senator a question? Mm-hmm. You were mentioning the other day when we were chatting about this that there was some reference of a initiative out there dealing with these?
Well, there was an initiative started last time, and I believe Bob Kiernan was one of the chief petitioners, and he withdrew it when he decided to run for the Supreme Court. That particular proposal was far more draconian than anything that Senator Gerstler and I suggested. For instance, it said if you were appointed, you were precluded forever running for that position, which simply wouldn't work, because then no one would ever want to be appointed because you give up your practice or whatever and serve for a few months and then not be able to be a judge again. There was, I think it was also a Missouri plan where you would
run for election and you'd either check, yes, I'll retain Judge Byers, or no, I won't. It was, I believe, that type of an initiative. And to me, that's dangerous to the judiciary. This approach, I think, is better.
Do you have any, obviously you don't have much concern, but have you thought about the perspective that this might politicize the appointment process for judges?
I don't think it will, because I'm confident whoever is the Speaker of the House and President of the Senate and, of course, the Chief Justice, they're going to pick people that are knowledgeable about the judiciary and will want good judges to serve. Currently, the judiciary appointments are political. They're not as political as most things, but, I mean, they are made by the governor after the governor reviews whatever considerations the governor feels are important. And so, to me, it's already a political process, but it only involves one branch of government initially. And this will involve two, which I think is important when, in essence, you're creating a position that becomes very close to a lifetime appointment if people continue to serve and want to be in a judge.
Neil, have you looked at how frequently the governor, I guess Governor Kitzhaber, has appointed off of the list suggested by the Bar Association?
No, I haven't. I don't have an answer to that. I know the bar will do a polling each time and submit that information to the Lazenby, but how the governor follows it or if he does, I'm not familiar with that.
Just would not diminish the opportunity to seek the advice of the bar.
Oh no! And in fact, you should.
Yeah. Okay. Any further?
And if this passed, you then the next step should be some implementing language as far as how quickly they are to make the suggestions, whether it be 60 days after the vacancy occurs. Those types of procedural things would be in the implementation language, and you could put in there that they would.
Brief recommendation.
We already stayed on.
Mr. Chair. Justice Carson noted it is that the judicial conference is proposed as well as the Oregon State Bar.
Yes, right.
And Mr. Chair, the only other question I had was for Senator Bryan, and that is with regard to the DMC. I know that there are like over 30 judges that have applied for two slots in Multnomah County. And I'm assuming that given the number of judicial openings around, that this is going to be, this could almost be a full-time job for five or six people. Are you anticipating per diem?
I would think they should be paid a per diem.
Okay. Thank you. That's kind of commission on your point, I don't know.
I think it's going to equal $50,000 to buy in.
I don't think so.
I would entertain a motion. Mr. Chair, I would move to ask three amendments to Senate Bill 7. Excuse me, SJR 7.
Senator Bryant has moved the guidance three amendments to SJR 7. Any further discussion? If not, let's have the clerk call the roll.
Senator Bryant?
Aye.
Senator Bryant?
No.
Senator Byers?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And proceed the necessary majority. We've now ready to move on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would move SJR 7.
I changed my vote. I don't have any objections to the amendments. I was voting on the bill. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, I move SJR 7 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bryant has moved SJR 7 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll.
Senator
Bryan?
Aye.
Senator
Brown?
No.
Senator
Miller? Aye. Aye. I'm going to receive the necessary majority. SJR 7 moves the floor of the due pass recommendation, then Senator Bryant will carry it.
Okay.
With that, we will, we're going to carry over the appointment of Cheryl Curran, and we're going to adjourn the rules and election committee. Thank you very much.